We're excited to flip the switch today. I hope you are too. My name is Ryan. I'm one of our pastors here, and I want to say good morning to everyone. Good morning to all those watching online. We're so excited to be together this morning to talk about flip the switch. But before we kind of get into things, I want to make a confession to you all. The confession is this. I really, really, really don't like to be bad at things. Okay? Is anyone else like with me today? You don't like to be bad at things? I do not like to be bad at things. My whole life, I've actually, like, you know, shaped my entire schedule and what I'm involved in to do more of the things that I'm good at and less of the things that I'm bad at. And so I've actually been learning about this thing called the growth mindset. Psychologists have been talking about it recently, and basically they're saying that you can look at yourself differently and see yourself as someone who can grow. And even if you're bad at something now, you might not always be bad at it. And so I've been thinking about different areas that this might affect, like rock climbing. I'm really bad at rock climbing. I'm also really bad at tackle football. You know, you'd think this stature would just be really intimidating to everyone, but it's not. I actually had a high school, like, state champion wrestler tell me one time, if I saw you as the guy that I was going to wrestle, I'd be really excited. And I'm like, are you hitting on me? I think honestly, like, I just have this body type that is really easy to wrestle against, apparently. But this growth mindset has you kind of take some phrases that you're likely to tell yourself with something that you're bad at and kind of flip them on its head. So these phrases are sometimes what we tell ourselves when we're bad at something. I'm no good at this. This is too hard. I'll stick to what I know. And these things kind of get ingrained in us, and then we just stay static. We don't actually improve. We don't actually get better. But basically, the growth mindset says replace these phrases with these ones. Replace I'm no good at this to how can I improve? Replace this is too hard with learning takes time. It takes time to learn how to rock climb. It takes time to, you know, work out and get stronger and be good at tackle football. And instead of sticking to what you know, maybe tell yourself, I like a challenge. I like when things are hard. And so I kind of have been realizing, okay, what's an area where I can grow? What's an area where I can embrace being bad at something? And I didn't want to go too extreme right off the bat, so I decided that I was going to work on an area that's really important to me, and it's sushi, okay? Sushi. I love sushi. I think what that means is I love soy sauce and wasabi mixed together, drenched on rice. But I do like sushi, and what I realize is that every time I'm eating sushi, I have to ask the embarrassing question, can I please have a fork? Because I don't know how to use chopsticks. And so I was in California just a couple months ago with my sister, and they eat a lot of sushi there. So I was in a sushi restaurant, and I said, I'm not going to ask for a fork. I'm just going to try chopsticks. And so I fumbled. I dropped things on the floor. I was so frustrated at myself. I don't like being bad at things. But I decided, okay, I'm going to continue to try to go to some sushi places this summer and get better. And just last week, or a week and a half ago, I was eating out with five other people, and I think that I was, like, the best person with chopsticks, okay? I'm not great by any means, but, you know, you got it. You can do it. And it was amazing. It was amazing to realize, oh, it only took, like, four or five times trying this thing to actually get better. And what happened in that scenario? What happened was I began to see myself differently. I began to think differently about the challenge that was in front of me. And in some ways, you could say I flipped the switch. I flipped the switch on how I was viewing myself and how I was viewing the problem in front of me. And we could kind of do this dynamic of growth mindset and how can we get better and how can we flip the switch in our minds about things in any number of areas. We could talk about career. We could talk about finances. But we want to take the next few weeks to talk about our relationships, and not just romantic relationships, but every relationship that we could possibly think of. We have friends, we have family members, we are married or dating or single, or different ways that we interact with the people around us. And so I'm really excited today because we're going to dive into one of Jesus' most famous teachings on relationships. And so if you're here today and you're not a Christian, maybe you're not sure about this God thing or this Jesus thing, I think it's actually a great Sunday to be here because we all have relationships, and I think Jesus, this master teacher, is going to give us some great advice on how to navigate them. And so we're going to dive into what's called the Sermon on the Mount, one of Jesus' famous discourses in the Gospel of Matthew, and we're going to dive into Matthew chapter 7, and one of the reasons we can trust what we're about to read is because this is not just something that happens to be in the Bible, but this guy Matthew wrote and saw Jesus teaching these things. He was there, and he followed Jesus. He knew him, and he saw him raised from the dead, and that's why he decided to write these things for us. And so we're going to dive in to Matthew 7, right at the beginning in verse 1. And this is Jesus teaching, and he says, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." So right away we see that what Jesus wants to talk to us about today in our relationships is this idea of judging other people. Each of us, if we're human, we have this corrective energy, this critical energy in us that wants things to change around us. Things are not how we want them to be. Things are not how we prefer them to be. And particularly in other people, there are folks who annoy us. There are people who frustrate us. There are character flaws and character defects in the people we're around all the time. And so we have this criticism, this judgment stored up, and we often express it towards other people. Maybe you're someone who, your spouse right now in your marriage, you feel like they're not pulling their weight, or you feel like there's things that they're doing or things that they're not doing, and there's just this judgment, this part of you that wants to lash out and say, you are not doing what you're supposed to be doing. You focus on every little thing that they're doing wrong. Maybe your boss is someone like this that just frustrates and annoys you, and you nitpick and you figure out everything they do, and it just annoys you, it frustrates you, and you kind of get worked up about it. Maybe you're someone who, you know, you're a little bit more politically leaning towards being a Democrat, and you just look at those Republicans over there, and you're like, man, I cannot stand these people. What are they thinking? What is going on? Maybe you're the opposite. Maybe you lean Republican, and you look at all these people, and you think, man, they should just all move to Europe or something like that. I don't know. This is what causes a lot of the tension that we see right now. I think all of us can agree that there's division, that there's anger, that there's people judging each other right now in our communities. And so what do we do with this? Well, Jesus says here, if you do that, if you're someone who's critically minded, if you're someone who paints with that broad brush and is very nitpicky, you too will be judged in the same way. In the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, we all have this measure, this standard that we bring to other people, it will be measured to you in the same way. Now, this is kind of an interesting dynamic, right? Because Jesus is making this simple point that whatever standard, whatever measure, whatever judgment you bring to the people around you, no matter how small or how big, that is the same type of thing that we need to put on ourselves because it's coming back. The measure, the standard, the judgment that we feel towards others, we need to realize is also the things that we struggle with and also the things that we fail at. And so that measure is coming back and being applied to us. I was just trying to think of like a really simple example of this in my own life, and I think about it when I'm driving, okay, out on the highway, maybe 264, 64. Have you ever been driving, you're going down the road, you're paying attention, you're feeling good, and you look over to your right or to your left, and you see someone who's doing what? And you're like, come on! Come on, people! I'm out here driving this car, it costs me money, and you don't even care. You don't care if you run into me, you don't care what's happening in front of you, and I will just be honest with you, lots of confessions today, I judge them, right? I judge them. I think many of us do when we see that happening. But probably, you know, a few minutes before that, or a few minutes after that, I'm sitting there, you know, hands at 10 and 2, I'm feeling good, driving down the highway, and all of a sudden, what happens? Burn, 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 burn. Burn, 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 burn. And oh, who texted me? Who texted me? Oh, it's important? Oh, it's important. Well, then I'll definitely respond to it. Of course I'll. I do the same thing. And obviously statistics show that many of us, when we see someone else who's texting and driving, it's like, why are you doing that? It's dangerous out here. But when it's our lives and our conversations and our people, we're so prone to do the very same thing. And Jesus is saying here, be careful, be hesitant to put that judgment on other people when you haven't taken a good look at yourself, because that same measure, that same standard is coming back to you. And the way I kind of want to put it for us today is using this image of a boomerang. The first time I ever saw or used a boomerang was when my older sister had gone to on a trip to Australia, and she came back and got us all gifts, and she got me a wooden boomerang from Australia. It's not this one. You'll see why in a second. But I was about 11 years old, maybe in fifth grade, and I went out to this park and would practice. And it's not exactly the easiest thing to get good at, but I would go out, I'd throw the boomerang, and I realized if I threw it at this angle, if I threw it hard enough, it would go around and it would come back, which was amazing. And so after two times at the park, I thought, man, I'm good at this. I can go from this wide open field and I can now just do it in my front yard, right? Suburban Virginia Beach, it'll be fine. So I'm standing like right in front of the front steps of my front door, and I'm like, oh, I'll just throw it across my driveway. It'll go across the street, into this little gap in my neighbor's yard, around the tree, and it'll come right back to me, right? Of course that's how it's going to work. So I go and I throw it as hard as I can. I used all my, 2 days of practice, and I did, and I went further than I thought. And it went through the gap in my neighbor's yard, but then, wham, it ran right into their 12-passenger van in their driveway. Which, their van was fine, but my, aboriginal, like, 200-year-old boomerang was broken in half. I don't think it was actually that nice, but it was devastating. It was devastating to have my boomerang broken, but that's my experience with boomerangs. But I would submit to you today that Jesus is telling us that every judgment that we make, every criticism that we feel towards other people is actually a boomerang. These things that we throw out and we feel so powerful when we're doing it, it's like it's a weapon that we get to wield towards other people who are annoying us or frustrating us. It's actually coming right back to you. And we can say it like this. The judgment you throw around comes back around. The judgment that you throw around comes back around. It's like a boomerang. And oftentimes we get hit, or we should get hit, or we should feel the weight of our own standard and our own measure that we put towards other people. And so the question is, like, what does that actually mean? Okay, is Jesus saying that one day God is going to take all the judgments we made of other people and put them back on us? Does it mean that just other people are going to start to judge us in similar ways if we're being hypocritical? And I think each of those might be getting at some of what he's saying, but let's keep reading in the passage and see kind of what Jesus is getting at as we dive in to verse 3. Jesus is saying, hey, if you judge others, you will also be judged in the same way. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? Why do you look at the speck of sawdust when there is a plank in your own eye? Now, if you're a teenager, you may not realize this, but the term planking, the idea of like, standing, like laying down stiff as a board on something, actually comes from a real thing, right? It comes from a plank, because when you put it down, it just kind of like sits there, right? But Jesus is talking about having a plank in our eye that's blinding us and blocking us from being able to see. And yet here we are with this plank over our head, and we just are so obsessed with these little specks of sawdust. And we see one of those little specks in the eye of someone around us, and it makes us so upset, it makes us so obsessive to hone in on that and want to fix it. And we're sitting here with this huge piece of wood in our own eye. And here we are. Oh, let me get that for you. You must not be able to see very well. I'm doing you a favor right now. Wow, I'm amazing, right? Jesus is using this image of this little speck of sawdust and a plank in our own eye. And I was kind of thinking about this, processing this as I'm reading this, meditating on it in preparation for this message, and I realized that this is the story of my life. I am in the middle of kind of a moving transition. I think I talked about it last time I spoke, and I'm going from living alone to living with two other guys. And one of the guys is really different than me. If you're familiar with the Myers-Briggs test, he's a P and I'm a J, which what that means is he's like 100% like laissez-faire, kind of go with the flow, not the most organized, forgets things, is late to things. And I'm like 200% like anal retentive type A, like on time, like annoying about it, right? And so I'm just seeing constantly in these first 2 weeks of living with him all the ways that he, oh, you said you were going to unpack that box, but you left for a week and didn't do it, and it was just sitting there. Oh, you didn't load up the dish that you said you were going to load up. Oh, you're late to this. And it's just like, oh my gosh, I'm honing in on everything this guy does because, one, he's different, and number two, he has this personality that just, it just creates friction for me because of who I am. And I was preparing this message, realizing that I needed a different perspective, that I needed to flip the switch in this scenario. And it just so happens that a month prior to that, I had done this experiment that was really helpful that God reminded me of it. It was an experiment that I did because we read this leadership book on our staff team in Norfolk. And what we had realized is that credibility for a leader is really important. And what they kind of challenge you to do is do what you say you're going to do as a leader, and you'll gain credibility, and people will be able to trust you. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm type A, I'm organized, I'm on time. Man, I do this. I probably do that really well. I probably have a lot of credibility. This is not something I need to work on. But you know, just to have some fun, I'll track for a month all the times that I don't do what I say I'll do. And I actually needed to write it all down because there were so many things. And I'll just love to share some of them with you because this is my plank in my eye that I did not see when I'm looking at another person in my life. I said I'd get to an event at 4:30, but I was 30 minutes late for no reason. I said I'd play racquetball with someone, but then canceled at the last minute because I didn't feel like it. I committed to tracking a certain set of data for my job, and then I got too busy and just didn't. Once I said I'd call a friend back in 5 minutes and then forgot. Twice I switched the time of a meeting with people before I even asked if it was okay. 3 times I said I'd send different emails and then forgot. And here's the kicker, okay? I was late to a meeting, so I called the person to let them know and ask for forgiveness, but they told me they were going to be even more late than I was. And I got angry at them. How can you be that late? I mean, I'm only a little bit late, but you're going to be that late? Are you kidding me? This realization that I can be so obsessed with one box or one dish or one time of someone being late, and yet the entire time I'm focusing on this speck in someone else's life, I have a plank. And even if I know I do, I'm totally ignoring that fact as I nitpick other people. And we see, as we look back at these verses, Jesus having the same type of frustration that you would have as you think about this situation in my life. Come on, you're going to pay attention to sawdust and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, to your sister, to your friend, to another person made in the image of God, when you have a plank blocking your view, and be so focused on this speck? I read many years ago an essay by a famous writer named C.S. Lewis. He was an author and a theologian in the middle of the 20th century, but he wrote this essay called The Trouble with X, and he describes this phenomena of having someone in your life that he names X who is really annoying to you, or they frustrate you, or they have this character flaw that just rubs you the wrong way. Maybe they're lazy. Maybe they, you know, chew gum really annoyingly. Or, you know, maybe it's something deeper than that. But we all have this person that we're like, man, I just can't stand you. I can't be around you. And he kind of writes in this essay about this phenomena and what that's like. And then kind of halfway through the essay, he starts talking about the trouble with X from God's perspective. How does God view this scenario differently? And I'd love to read just a passage from it. And it's a little bit long, but I think you'll be able to follow along. C.S. Lewis writes, "There are two respects in which God's view of this trouble with X must be very different from ours. In the first place, he sees, like you, how all the people in your home or your job are in various degrees awkward or difficult. But when he looks at that home or factory or office, he sees one more person of the same kind, the one you never do see. I mean, of course, yourself. That is the next great step in wisdom, to realize that you also are just that sort of person. You also have a fatal flaw in your character. All the hopes and plans of others have again and again shipwrecked on your character, just as your hopes and plans have shipwrecked on theirs. It is no good passing this over with some vague general admission, such as, of course, I know I have my faults. It is important to realize that there is some really fatal flaw in you, and it is almost certainly something you don't know about, like what the advertisements call halitosis, or bad breath, which everyone notices except the person who has it. But why, you ask, don't others tell me? Believe me, they have tried to tell you over and over again, and you just couldn't take it. Perhaps a good deal of what you call their nagging or bad temper or strangeness are just their attempts to make you see the truth. And even the faults you do know you don't know fully. You say, I admit I lost my temper last night. I admit I was late that one time. But the others know that you're always doing it, that you are a bad-tempered person. This idea that we are so prone to look at the people around us and see them through a certain lens, and it's so easy for us to see their character flaw and ignore the fact that we have the very same thing. And Jesus is saying, I want you to know that every judgment, every criticism, every way that you view someone else is actually a boomerang, and it should lead you back to yourself. It should lead you back to view yourself as someone who has a plank that's blinding you. And I'll say it this way, whatever you see in their life, there is way more in your life that you should see but haven't dealt with. This is just the nature of being a human being. You are much more aware of what's going on in your own mind and your own heart and your own life than anyone else. And yet we're so much better at taking the 1% that we're seeing of someone else's life and seeing what could be fixed. But how about we take some of that corrective energy, that critical energy, and recognize that we have so much that we haven't even dealt with. And maybe you're thinking, as we're continuing in this idea, like, can I ever call somebody out, right? Can I ever actually correct someone? Because, you know, I may have a plank, but they still got a speck, and it's a really annoying speck, and it's really impacting me. Can I ever actually confront anybody on their flaw before I'm perfect? And I think Jesus is going to address this in this last verse that we're reading together today. Jesus says, you hypocrite, you who look at the speck and ignore the plank, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Jesus is not saying you can never remove a speck from someone's eye. You can never bring up a speck in someone else's eye. You can never bring up the way that someone's annoying or frustrating you. But we got to deal with something else first, and it's this huge plank, because it's not letting us see clearly. You see, because it's not just enough to recognize that I have this plank in front of my vision and acknowledge it and then start picking at other people, but realizing that this thing, whatever it is, whatever this flaw is that's blinding us, it actually obscures our view. It makes it so we can't see other people clearly. And oftentimes, the very specks that we're identifying and we're trying to work on in other people are the things that annoy us because of what this plank is. We're seeing our own selves in the mistakes and the flaws of others. And he says, you hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye. First acknowledge this issue. And I want to kind of flip this idea and kind of start to look at this situation from God's perspective. And how does God view this situation of us being flawed and us interacting with other people who are flawed? And in order to get at this, I want to read one more section from this essay by C.S. Lewis. He said the first way that God's view is different is he doesn't just see all the other people around you. He sees you, and he sees that you also have a plank. C.S. Lewis later, he continues, he says, but the second difference is this. I almost read the first passage again. That would have been fun. The second difference is this. God loves the people in spite of their faults. He goes on loving. He does not let go. Don't say, it's all very well for him. He hasn't got to live with them. He has. He is inside them as well as outside them. He is with them far more intimately and closely and incessantly than we can ever be. every vile thought within their minds and ours, every moment of spite, envy, arrogance, greed, and self-conceit comes right up against his patient and longing love and grieves his spirit more than it grieves ours. This reality that the creator of the universe, completely perfect, completely objective, no speck or plank in his eye, he can see everything the way it is. And he sees in every single one of us how we have a plank. We have a whole wall of ways that we are flawed, that we are broken, that we have broken his standard for life. And yet what does he do? He sends his son to die for those things. He sends his son to purchase forgiveness for me and for you. And instead of seeing us in light of our plank, he puts something different in his lens. He puts the cross of Jesus. And he views us now through Jesus' sacrifice, through the forgiveness that Jesus has purchased, through the love that Jesus has shown on our behalf. And instead of viewing our plank, he now sees the cross between himself and between me and between you. This is how God handles the flaws that he sees in every single human being who's ever lived. And so maybe you and I can acknowledge the fact, can take the plank out of our own eye. And how do we do that? We do that by acknowledging it before God, by taking it to him and saying, "Will you forgive me? I recognize that I have flaws. I recognize that I don't measure up." And receiving the forgiveness that he can only give through his son, Jesus. And so the next time you're tempted to judge, the next time you're tempted to be hypercritical, and I'm talking here about just normal everyday interactions. I'm not talking about extreme situations of abuse or someone who's highly manipulative or highly unhealthy. Those are different scenarios. But in just normal everyday interactions, when you're tempted to judge someone or judge another group of people, first, we have to acknowledge our own plank. Acknowledge the fact that I can see so much more in my own life that's flawed than I could ever see in someone else's, just by the nature of my own existence and consciousness, seeing what's going on in me. And then secondly, we've got to ask God for the perspective of the cross. You see, because the only way that we can actually acknowledge our plank and face it head on and not just ignore it or try to sweep it under the rug is because of what Jesus has done for us. We can come to our Heavenly Father and say, "Yes, yes, there is a plank right here. I'm broken. I've failed. I'm hard to live with. Would you forgive me? Would you change me? Would you heal me?" And then receiving that kind of grace, receiving that kind of compassion, how could we not view other people in light of the cross of Jesus? How could we not have the same perspective as God of viewing other people's flaws through the lens of the cross? I just want to, before we end today, I just want to talk to a particular group of people in the room today because I think this is important. If you're here today and you are a follower of Jesus, I'm talking to you right now. I'm not talking, if you're someone who's just visiting, if you're someone who's just checking things out, we're so glad that you're here, and I'm glad that you get to listen on this. But if you're a Christian, if you're a follower of Jesus, this idea of judging others, this idea of being overly critical of people around us, of people we don't even know, this is something that we're failing at. This is something that we're known for. We're known as people who are superior, who are judgmental, who are overly critical, morally proud. And we're the people who believe that we're flawed enough that God had to send his son to die for those things. And yet we are the people who are the most proud and the most ready to point out other people's faults. It should not be. We should be the most humble, the most loving, the most gracious towards those around us, especially those who don't know Jesus. And not expect them to live the way that we think they should live. We should have God's perspective on everyone as he sees their flaws, as he sees their plank, is that he understands, he seeks to know them, and he wants to forgive them and be in relationship with them. And so could we just recognize as a church, as Grace Bible Church, if you're a part of what God's doing here, we need to grow in humility. We need to grow in seeing our world and seeing other people through this lens of the cross. And so let's stop throwing out judgments like they're weapons. And let's recognize that every judgment is a boomerang. Let's acknowledge our plank again and again, as many times as it takes. And let's ask God for a new perspective, the perspective of the cross. Let's pray. God, we're so thankful that you don't look at our plank and look at our failures and look at our brokenness and say, oh, I give up. They're too far gone. They've made too many mistakes. They're too annoying. They're too frustrating. But you continue to love us, and you continue to lay yourself down and show your grace. And so, God, would you give us the power to follow the words of your Son who gave us this great example? Would you give us the power, by virtue of his death and his resurrection, to love those around us, to show your grace, to overlook the faults that so often butt up against our ambitions and our selfish desires? God, would you help us to be people who don't judge others, but Lord, take that corrective energy, that critical energy, and are self-examining so that we grow, so that we flip the switch and see our relationships and see everything in our lives the way that you see them, through the lens of your Son, Jesus. And it's in his name we pray. Amen.